Good morning and welcome to 101.9, your favorite station, Chai FM. This lovely morning, the time is now 9 and 10 minutes and we're here in the studio, in the nice air-conditioned studio. We are with Cecily Pavancelli and Peter Feldman. Good morning.
Good morning, Roy.
And everybody looks so lovely today. And also we've got with us a guest in the studio named
Neil Hill from Urban Forests. Welcome.
Right. Good morning. Thank you. Thank you for having
Neil me. Hill will explain to us what's happening with the trees in Johannesburg. And, yeah, he'll tell us all about what to do, how to do. He's going to talk a little bit about his company, what the company does. Apparently this is quite a bit of a problem on trees. But before we touch the trees, let's talk a little bit about politics. We've got an election coming.
That's scary, Roy, because look what Malema is doing now. No, he's not only attacking people in South Africa, he's now attacking the Zimbabwean president and saying he shouldn't give pay out to white farmers. He must keep the money because that's the whole point of land grabbing.
Oh, yeah.
So he's now directing his anger at the rest of Africa, which is not a good thing.
Yeah, look, like I said, I don't like comparing nothing to the Nazism, but it's exactly what happened. I mean, if you follow, before I went to university, I made a, what do you call it? When I finished my studies, like after matric, with like a senior work that you have to do, and I've done it on the Third Reich. And that was the whole thing. I made, you know, the Third Reich. Yeah, that was my
thesis.
Yeah, thesis, exactly. That was so I made it on the Third Reich and the rise and fall of the Third Reich.
Yes.
So obviously the Third Reich is involved with Hitler and the whole thing. And if you look at Malema's whole campaign, it's like a carbon copy.
Did you read Mein Kampf?
For sure. What do you mean?
Was it well written?
Nope.
Good.
It's not well written. Really not. And it's a horrible move. It's a horrible book, but on the other hand, it explains a lot.
I'm sure.
How an idiot can take over a country. Madman, proper madman idiot can take over a country. Over and above that, it's a scary campaign, which is, it's, you know, when I grew up, when I went older, I understood that actually getting into power, it's much easier. Let me give you an example so you understand. It's, you know, my English is not my mother's tongue. The way it works is like this. If I want to promote you as a person, it will cost me, let's say it will cost me R1 million to put you on the global map, as advertising costs. But if I want to destroy your enemy or your competition, it will cost you much less. So this is basically the way it works. So about third of if two people are running to the to parliament, let's say myself and Ramaphosa, just for instance, it will be easier for me, instead of saying how good I am,
to say how bad he is.
Yes, to say how bad he is. It will cost me third.
Yes.
Yeah. It's very simple. So people will live with no choice. So it was simple. At the time, was the Jews were the bad ones. We're still the bad ones, by the way. Even with Malema, we're still the bad ones. But over and above us, we got the whites. So they don't really care. They don't really put you in all the whites together, Jews included.
Jews always included.
Yeah, Jews included. Yeah. For free, they throw us inside. So I do believe that Malema will be a big player in this game.
In these elections, and it's going to be interesting, Roy, to see how much of the population he's able to sway the EFF, because he did quite well in the first elections, and he's reckoning that he's going to do even better now.
If he's going to do the 15%, that's exactly following Hitler's
dictum,
idea.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, he was. Eventually, they got a coalition with Hitler, and then, if you know, the rest is history. Yeah. So, we're looking at that. We're looking from the other end that Ramaphosa not saying no to what you know. He's not saying no to what Malema is saying. Maybe because he wants to get elected, and I don't know how much power he's got in the ANC.
His hands are tied, Roy. You know, he's got that whole element of the top six.
Yeah.
Which is quite dangerous because he inherited a lot of it from the Zuma era.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to upset them, and he doesn't want to upset other areas within the party. So that's why he hasn't done all that he said he'd do over the last year or so. And he's biding his time because he's filling in where they kicked out Zuma. So he's filling in that time. It's only if they come back into power and he's elected, then maybe he'll start doing something. But you can't tell what's going to happen in the future.
You make sense, but don't forget that Sunshine here was with him the whole time. I mean, Ramaphosa was with Zuma. He was his vice president. What has he done? What, he held
he
his hand?
Didn't do
he had
anything.
His what?
He couldn't. His
couldn't.
Hands were tied. He
where
didn't
tied where? Tied where?
Tied behind his back.
He was a vice president.
I know.
The second
deputy,
highest
deputy president.
Deputy president. So,
I knew. I worked in Ramaphosa's company
many
years ago when he had Shanduka Group. I did PR.
All right.
And I got to know him, okay, you know, not all that well. You never really know somebody. And he was a good businessman. He knew how to put things together. He ran the company very well. He had interest in McDonald's. He had interest in a few others. And we went to Cape Town for a big launch of Shanduka. They were opening up.
Yeah.
Because they did a lot in the youth and encouraged youth, and they had their Black Umbrella Project, which was training young entrepreneurs, and they had awards for them. So I was involved in that sort of thing. And we had a dinner in Cape Town. I remember sitting near him and saying to him, why don't you become president one day? Why don't you? He said, the time is not right. I'm not ready yet. And it's just interesting how life has changed and how he's come in to fill that gap. So it's any time will tell what happens.
I've seen a post today. Tell me if it's wrong or right. Apartheid is not dead. It's simply under new management.
I like that.
Yeah, you like it?
I like it.
I think so too. I mean, I really think so. I mean, it's actually quite.
But would you say apartheid in different forms is implemented throughout the world in different forms? Kind of restricting people, putting people into boxes. You know, if you go to a party and there are mixed people, you find a group standing there who might be of color and another group standing over there. Do you see a complete mix? How do you see these
You don't
things?
See a complete mix. You're right 100%. But it's not apartheid.
No.
Apartheid is when you force one group not to meet the other group. I think.
Well, it's a law. That's what.
Yeah,
what
make it a law, which is idiotic law. You find it all over the world. Obviously, I mean, and the cultures don't really mix. I mean, that's why you got the study of sociology. You know, in sociology, you say, I mean, then you understand why cultures actually don't mix. The ones don't really.
It's different culture.
Exactly. Yeah. So they don't really mix. And when Western wants to meet African culture, that's what it comes to a clash. When Mandela came with the idea of Rainbow Nation,
It was Desmond Tutu actually coined the term.
Was it? Yeah, yes. Tutu. So, yeah, I think it's much purer than Mandela was, but, yeah, so Desmond Tutu came with the idea of Rainbow Nation. It was all nice and fresh, and to hear somebody's talking so nice about the nation. But from the other end, what's happening now? I mean, just
there's an amazing movie coming out called Act of Defiance. Where it's about the Rivonia trial, and it focuses on Bram Fischer, who was the lawyer. He was the head of the Communist Party, but he was also seen as part of the apartheid regime, and he defended all those who were accused of treason, and they were, you know, the Rivonia trial. And this movie's coming out, and it's got Dutch backing, and it's a Dutch director. And I saw it a couple of weeks ago. It's an excellent movie, and I recommend people to go and see it when it's finally on circuit. And I don't know when it's coming on circuit, but Roy, that's a film that you should actually see as well. It gives us the history and the Rivonia trial and the different aspects of it, because the new generation have forgotten. That's why they have Lily's Leaf Trust, the Lily's Leaf Farm. That's where they were all caught by the police. And the police didn't even know that the hierarchy were there. They went to look for Walter Sisulu.
Yeah.
They had a tip-off that he was there. And when they got there, they discovered all these guys were plotting the overthrow of the apartheid government. And that was on the 11th of July, 1963. And that's when it all came together.
The only thing is very imperative everybody to go and vote, and black, white, so, purple, Roy. Whatever Good. You are. You have to go and vote. And if you can, I'll be in Thailand, so I'm not going to vote, but...
Yeah, but Roy, change yeah. your flight. You've got to be here. You've got to vote. Every vote counts.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not going to change my flight. I'm telling you now. But yeah, but the idea is good, Cecily.
Good
the idea is great.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
So tell me, let's talk a little bit about trees before I'm going to put a nice song to make everybody happy. Yeah? So let's talk about trees. Cecily?
I'll start off. We are really interested to have Neil in studio today because there's so much talk and not enough information about the shot hole borer that is currently infecting trees throughout South Africa at the moment. So I thought,
if you can give us a few words about what is the shot hole borer.
Okay, so thank you very much for having me, and it's very nice to be here and listening to your conversation this morning. So basically, yeah, we have a big problem in Johannesburg and throughout the country with a little beetle that's causing havoc amongst our trees. So the beetle called the Polyphagus shot hole borer was introduced into our country probably in around about 2012, maybe 2013.
Sure.
But it was only really detected, I think, on the radar in around about 2015, 2016.
Sure.
So it would have taken some time to get up into Johannesburg because it was most likely brought into the country by some port or
yes,
another.
Yeah.
But it's not really sure how it was brought into the country. And its origins is basically Southeast Asia, in that part of the world, Vietnam. But it could have also been introduced through another country like California or Israel where
right.
they've had the problem before.
Yes.
So it's difficult to say how it got you. Some people say it may have come in pellets.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure about that because pellets generally wouldn't be a conducive home for the
sure,
food. It needs
dead wood.
It's
yeah.
dead wood.
Yeah.
So then they need nutrient. They need something to feed the fungus sure. that they grow. And dead wood wouldn't allow that. So
no.
I'm not sure that it was a pellet. I think it could have been just as easily brought in by a tourist.
Sure,
who popped.
And the mud of his shoes.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, or in his luggage or something
yeah.
like that. You know. So it's a tiny, tiny little beetle. It's only 2 millimeters in size. So it's very inconspicuous. You wouldn't you know, notice
you
it that easily.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it could have been brought in on somebody's jacket or luggage. Or
does it detect trees only or bushes?
No, it's mainly trees, large perennials, but trees, it's difficult to define what is a tree, you know, so you can have a tree that's a few meters tall or you can have
sure.
a tree that's 100 meters tall. So perennials, large perennials like trees and shrubs, as we know, that it attacks, yeah.
Obviously, some trees are more resilient than others towards that particular beetle, but we're going to talk about it just now. We just don't want to bore our listeners too much.
Good
too
word,
much.
Boy.
Bore.
Bore into a tree.
Yeah,
that
no,
was
no.
very clever.
Oh,
no, that was deliberate. So I can assure you, Pete.
Is it? So, yeah, I just want
to. You know about this group of Israelis that go to Italy. They go to
yeah.
Italy for vacation and they go to the Vatican to see what's going on. And next to the gate of the Vatican, they see this a guy, he's dressed very, very nicely, like a priest, very clean clothes with a suit and everything, and
yeah.
he's holding a box, and everybody come and give him money, and next to him they see there's a Jewish guy sitting there, he's dirty and everything, sitting with the cup, and
they give him small change.
They
yeah.
give him small change.
Yeah.
So they come to him and said, listen, let us look at this guy. This is how you make money. You need to just, okay. That he said, they go, as they go, the Jewish guy is going to the Christian guy and said, you see, Shlomo, they want to teach us how to make money.
And we here coming back talking about trees. Hey?
Yep.
Yeah,
trees.
Right. Yeah, trees.
Tell us more. We're fascinated. So you've explained what the beetle.
So we got a small beetle,
yeah.
a tiny beetle, 2 millimeters in the size, so you can't really spot it in your eye, with your eye.
Yeah.
What you can see, I mean, you can see a tree being affected, and we were driving the other day, and lately, since Cecily told me about those beetles, I was looking at every tree that I see a little bit dry. I said, oh, no, you see those little holes? He said, is that how you?
Yeah, so. Okay, if we go back a little bit, the problem with this beetle is that it's a vector of a disease of a fungi called Fusarium. So it only takes one female, one reproductive female, to cause the outbreak that we see now in the country. So it could have just been one beetle, for example, that came into the country.
Yeah.
That was a reproductive female, and she
started
with
Clopus. How does it work? How many offspring that one?
Yeah. So what happens is that the female, which is slightly bigger than the male, bores into the tree, and normally she finds a reproductive host that will allow the fungus to grow.
Okay.
The fungi is the food source of the beetle. So unlike other beetles that might bore into the wood and feed off the wood of the plant, this beetle is not interested in feeding off the wood. It feeds off a fungus it deposits in the tree. So it harvests its own sort of food supply. Mm. And then as it moves from one tree to another, it takes with it the fungi. So it deliberately deposits the fungus into the tree or into the stem of the tree.
And they feed off the fungus.
They feed off the fungus.
So
they,
the beetle and the larva.
Yeah. So basically they build these little sort of galleries inside the stems of trees. Not all trees are reproductive hosts, meaning that they won't allow the fungus to grow. They inhibit the fungus, but many trees do. And in those trees, those galleries are then used as a farm for the fungi. And as the eggs hatch and the larvae, you know, develop, they eat off that fungi, and so do the adults. And then the female can then reproduce with the offspring as well. So the females can reproduce with their brothers and sisters, and then, you know, they carry on and offspring as well. So
obviously the outbreak is due to our trees don't have the knowledge, and I'm sorry, I'm talking about trees with knowledge. Our trees don't have the knowledge, don't have the tools to fight that particular one, because those trees are indigenous to our country here, and this beetle came from Vietnam or wherever it comes. There's a lot of trees in Vietnam. I mean, Vietnam is full of trees, is actually full of forests, and it doesn't affect it there.
Yeah. So I think that's an important thing that we need to look at. And basically, I think due to globalization that we have this problem, because the beetle wouldn't be able to have traveled this far. You know, it would have been probably undermined and controlled by other things like climate possibly and predators on the way here. You know, so the distance between us and Vietnam is too great for the beetle to get here. So it's been introduced, and because it's been introduced into an area like ours, where we haven't had the problem before, our trees haven't developed at the same time as the beetle had over millions of years. So there is no resistance in some cases. But it's not just trees that are exotic. It's indigenous trees as well.
Sure.
So they are attacking both types of trees that we have here.
So what is your advice? I'd love to explain to our listeners what they can do. You know, first, how do you identify a tree that's infected? And second, what do you do? Do you leave it? Do you treat it? Is there a treatment? Do you cut it down?
So, I mean, I think we can't overemphasize the extent of the problem. I think people need to understand that it is going to be, for the next maybe 10 to 15 years, a very serious problem in Johannesburg.
Why do you say 10 to 15?
I think because by that time, a lot of the trees that would still be infected will be infected. I think we're still only seeing the beginning stages of this outbreak, you know, this epidemic. And I don't think it's slowing down. Some people suggest that it's reached the tail end of it and it's not.
Why would it slow down? I mean,
well, exactly.
The population will develop and flourish because there's no natural, if that particular beetle doesn't have a natural enemy, it will.
No known predators.
Yeah.
And I nearly fell out my chair when you told us during the break that from one female, she will have 7 million offspring.
7 million offspring.
In a year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's
so
with, scary.
Within her
I've got a problem with two kids. I mean, 7 million. Oh.
You can't control the numbers. You know, you can't, some people say you could sort of, you know, manage the problem or stop it from spreading. I don't think that's possible. It's a winged insect.
Yeah.
So it will fly when it needs to move on. It will move on to the next tree and
just carry on.
Carry on.
Peter.
Carry on its destruction.
What fascinates me is more the man we're talking to. How did you become interested in trees? What was the drive?
Yeah. So I think basically my main initial drive was to be outside and working with nature, you know, not stuck indoors and
Behind a desk.
So I think that was the first sort of motivation. That I didn't see myself sort of behind
desk
walls and not seeing the sun and things like that. So And then just by chance, really, I spent some time traveling overseas and doing this and that. And in some places I worked sort of as a gardener, not thinking that I would ever become an arborist. But so it happens that there was a position available at a company 25 years back or so. Maybe. That I joined, and I just started up there and basically just enjoy doing what I'm doing. So,
are you from Johannesburg?
Yeah, originally. No, not originally. Originally South African, but born and bred. Nelspruit.
Nelspruit.
Boy.
Yeah.
Good. That's good vegetation, that part of the world, Roy.
Yeah.
But been living here for the last 25 years or so.
Fantastic. So what do we do? What's the solution?
Yeah, so that's the difficult one, because there's California, for example, in the States, they've had this problem for 12 years or so. Israel,
same problem.
Israel, right. As well, yeah.
Israel has had it, but I'm not sure. I don't know too much about the Israeli issues as far as the border goes. I know the avocado plantations were under threat, and obviously that's a serious, serious problem for agriculture. But in California, it's more shade and ornamental trees, so more the stuff that we're dealing with on a day-to-day basis. Yeah, yeah. And they picked it up in one of their botanical gardens. And since whenever it was first, you know, seen, they haven't been able to come up with a solution. And arboriculture has basically been developed in America probably more than any other country for over a century, I would say. So you would think that if they don't have sort of the means to deal with the problem, then we are in for a bit of a hiding.
Sure.
So they haven't come up with a remedy. Mm. One of their suggestions, and what they have done quite successfully, I think, in some places, that they've actually chosen to fell the trees that are host plants. Yeah. So they've reduced the number of beetle population by doing that.
Sure. What is your advice to our listeners? What would you say if they identify a tree in their garden, for example, that's infected?
So look, there is a very good chance that if you're living in Joburg, especially in the northern suburbs, you're going to have borer in your garden. And it's a little bit difficult to identify from one tree to another because they vary so much. But the most obvious is huge amounts of resin oozing out of some stems and branches.
Sure.
So globules of resin falling down to the ground and forming puddles in the tree. So that's
big
a
telltale.
Very obvious sign. Yeah. And then more discreetly, it's looking really for a hole that's no bigger than a millimeter in size. Very
like a pinhole.
Pinhole, yeah.
And what happened to stuff like melatonin and that we used to put on, not melatonin, sorry.
Chemical.
I
know which one you're talking about. I just can't get the name.
Yeah.
You're thinking of not tenants, no?
No. I remember it's now. I don't know much about poison.
My
poisons.
Dad was thinking of using it the other day. Don't.
Why? I mean, poisons don't work.
So this is the issue now. So if you think you may have a problem with a tree in your garden, then the best thing to do is get somebody out, like myself or another arborist.
What is your telephone number? I mean, can people call you?
Yeah, sure.
All right, what's your telephone number?
So the landline is 011-314-1090.
If you've got any questions, please send us the questions to 061-895-1019. Our SMS number, it will cost you $1.50, but you can try that one, 34519. And please repeat.
It's 011-314-1090.
Okay, and they'll talk to you, and you will come and you see what we can do for the tree. So there is something to do and to save those trees.
Yes, so I think management is the key word, really. You know, you can't solve this. I don't think it's something that you're going to remedy. Mm-hmm. But you could manage it, and the way you need to do that is you need to have somebody with some experience identify the tree first and have some knowledge about trees to make the call whether this is or not the borer that's causing the problem. If it is the borer, how does the tree respond to it? We've got a fair idea, you know, of the last few years what to expect.
And I want to ask you, before the borer attacks, can you do something?
Yeah, so prophylactic treatment is difficult because the problem with anything that you use, it's going to wear off. And if the tree is a reproductive host, it's vulnerable when that wears off. So that would mean you would have to apply whatever you're applying. If it works is one question.
Yeah.
And if it does, you know, constantly.
Sure. The way they were saying is Malathion. Malathion.
Oh, Malathion, yeah.
Yeah, Malathion was at the time used for.
Can
a
you
lot
use
of
that?
So one of the difficulties with treating borer is that systemic treatments like the ones
Malathion,
that you're talking about are effective, but they're only effective in a thin layer of the tree. So when it's absorbed through the vascular tissue, it's absorbed in a very thin layer close to the bark. So if the borer is beyond that, which these borers do go, then it's not effective. So you need something that penetrates further into the wood, and that's the difficulty. You know, that's why we can't.
Have you got anything?
So there is, yeah, there are some studies now and research being done in a new product, which I don't think has been registered yet. But what they've done, what these developers, scientists have done, is that they've come up with something that's more permeable. So a product that contains lipids that can pull into the tree much deeper than normal insecticides or fungicides mixed with water.
Those borer have, I'm sure they've got their own natural predators.
They do. But biological controls are a problem, Are a problem because you can't introduce a biological control measure into a country without doing huge amounts of research.
You don't know what the knock-on
I know is. They've done the same thing in Miami. They had huge problem. They still got a huge problem with fire ants.
Yes.
And what they've done is they introduced a wasp.
Yeah.
That actually kills them. That's the only way they managed to kill those fire ants. I mean, they couldn't kill them. I mean, you can spray them, but they pop again.
This is the problem. You never know what the knock-on effect is. So if you look at the Britain, for example, with the grey squirrel that they introduced. And I mean, now the numbers are just completely out of control. So there's always they're now encouraging people to just kill them. Toss them on the barbecue and
Do you think they got a wasp population, wasp infestation in?
Then they're going to have something to kill the wasp.
There's always going to be a knock-on effect.
You have to.
You know, one of the things that I was thinking about, you know, with mosquitoes, they were talking about, what's that terrible disease? That terrible disease from mosquitoes.
Malaria?
Terrible deformities.
Oh.
Polio. The elephantitis.
Starts with a Z. Anyway, it will come to me. What they were saying is to genetically manipulate the females they would only then give birth to, would only have males.
Yes.
And once you wipe out the female population, you would only have males. And
or you can convert them to Judaism, then they won't have sex, and then they'll never, ever, ever have any.
Then everything's fine. Everything's good with the world.
I killed a big mosquito in the bath this morning.
I want to introduce song. This is actually coming, and we're back, and thank you for staying with us. We got a little bit.
We got some more news from the marketplace. Hurry to the Norwood Mall. Our Pesach gift market is on till the 19th of April. We are open daily in the center court from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m, excluding Saturdays. We have about 20 stores with a stunning range of gifts to suit all pockets and tastes. Our resident stores also have amazing gifts on offer. So come and browse. You can support some of your favorite charities who are all represented at the market. And then we have Pick and Pay Norwood Hyper have these pocket savings, sweet deals just for you. Pick and Pay Kosher Stewing Beef is delicious at $74.99 per kilo. Kosher Chicken Flatties, assorted and very low at $79.99 per kilo. A lamb stew is just R129.99 per kilo. And Kosher Lean Beef Mince is $69.99 per kilo. Catch these and many more specials in store. These specials are exclusive to Pick and Pay Norwood Hyper and only while stocks last. Pick and Pay Hyper Norwood, the best place to shop when you want to buy a lot. Thanks, Roy.
That's it.
That's it.
Smoothest
it's
voice.
Simple. Simple today. So what do you think about them not having sex?
The mosquito.
Well, you know, it's just going to end up.
I mean, listen, we're Jewish and we're suffering from a problem called, you know, they say, you know, how long is to convert Judaism to Judaism? They say, if a woman wants to convert to Judaism, it takes 4 years. It actually, in actual fact, it's 1 year and 4 years of they say the threat that you know, they take a Christian woman, good Christian woman, to turn to Judaism. It's nothing. It's 1 year just to learn a little bit the Hebrew and whatever, but 3 years just to learn how to say no to a husband. No. Do you want? No. You want?
Law.
No. Law. Here you go.
Law.
Law. That's how. Yeah. That's
one of the few Jewish words. Yeah. I was going to say Jewish words, Hebrew words. I met a guy he hadn't met a Jew before, and he said, say something in Jewish. I said what?
In Jewish.
Say something in Jewish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant.
If we skip that idea of mine, you can put. So, yeah,
that would be your idea.
Yeah, first of all, they can contact you and you can come and identify, and obviously it doesn't charge too much, I promise you guys. Yeah. And,
1,000 rand a tree, I heard, is it?
Yeah, let me tell you, if you can save it 3,000-4,000 bucks, that won't be bad.
Yeah. Look, we're talking about costs and treatment. So treatment, you know, I can say, from the beginning, there's no guarantees, and I think that's what people need to understand, because there's so much emotion behind this. You know, when you've got a large plane or oak tree that is sentimental, that is 60, 70, 80 years
create
old.
Create shade. It's part of your home.
It's part of
your
home.
Build your house around it. Yeah.
Kids have grown up, you know, playing around the tree. The swings are in the tree. You've had your, you know, mom's birthday bash underneath the tree. All of these things take part underneath these trees, and so there's definitely a sentimental and emotional. So when we talk about treatments, sometimes I think people sort of don't listen to that part of it, you know, that there is still no guarantees, and as I said earlier, in California they haven't come up with a solution, so people need to understand that if they're going to start putting money into trying to treat the tree, there's a good chance that, you know, in some cases the tree won't survive, and then they have the problem of having to fell the tree later. So it's still a very much a problem as far as the sort of the sensitivities around that go, the ethics behind, you know, whether you charge or don't charge, things like that. So it's still a little bit of a problem for us.
A gray area.
It's a gray area. But for me, the best treatment really is to start planting new trees. And that for me is the most simplistic, most practical way to go about dealing with the problem in the future. Because if we plant for every tree that dies, three more trees now, we're going to have more trees possibly in the future, so the canopy, the urban forest, won't thin out as much as it could without doing that. So that's for me the key.
What trees would you recommend then growing? What trees are showing the resistance to this borer?
Yeah, so that again, it's a little bit difficult, and you need somebody to guide you with that, you know, because you could go to a nursery, look at a nice tree and plant that, but it's very vulnerable. So you need again to have a discussion with somebody like myself to guide you. It's at the moment, it looks like the indigenous trees are, there are some of them vulnerable, but generally speaking, more of them are not.
Right. Which is great.
Which is great, because I think we do need to introduce, for many other reasons, more indigenous trees into our gardens.
We need to wrap up. So give us a few words. Give us, summarize for me.
Neil, just hold on. Yeah. Okay. So go on. Tell us. What are you?
Come back later. Come back next
Yeah.
Night.
You're going to have to come back on.
So I think basically treatment wise, The main problem we have with this beetle is the fungi, not the beetle itself. So if we could come up, and there are sort of rumors that there might be something available that can help sterilize the fungus, you know, so that when the female moves from one tree to another, she's not carrying a fungus that can grow. So that would be a great way to deal with this. And it's an organic product, so it should be able to be used
very often.
Six old boxes.
Do you have any successes?
At this stage, it's still too early to say. Anything that you deal with with a tree, you have to look at over a long period of time. So I don't want to say.
How long does it take a borer to kill it?
In a mature oak, possibly 18 months to 2 years.
This is quick.
That's quick.
Yeah. It's
I
not
it was a,
a
lot longer. That's
so guys, I mean, you must be on your toes now. The time is now 9:52 and we have to say, goodbye-ish. Now we'll have him back because it's quite interesting.
Fantastic. Neil, can you just give us, it's Urban Forest, your number once again, last time for our audience?
It's 011-314-1090. And yeah, they're welcome to call us and we'll give them some help.
Could I try and be funny and say, is this thing treason?
Oh, I love you, Pete.
So just to conclude, first of all, thank you for coming here and introducing that particular problem. We will always be happy to have you back here, and I will promote your business because I think we have to have trees. When I came to South Africa, and I'm a pilot, so I was flying around. So, and, you know, somebody told me, I don't know who told me, that Johannesburg is the most, the biggest Big urban forest in the world.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, it's the biggest man-made forest in the world. Yes. Yeah.
Which is amazing. City that would be.
Sure. Can you imagine how tragic it would be if we just don't get
crazy.
On top of this?
It's actually crazy. Yeah. So, guys, I mean, if you need any help, please contact this gentleman. He gave you his number. And if you want to call, our offices, you can contact me, 083-6100-209. And I will give you his number with the greatest pleasure. I want to thank you for being with us. And I want you to be with us as well on Wednesday next week, where we're going to have the Porn Stars Unplugged. And what more? What more? I want to say good morning and a great time to yourself, to Cecily Pavoncelli.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, Peter Feldman.
Thanks.
Neil, thank you so much for being with us.
Neil.
And, yeah, the Doors.